Hello, and thank you for listening to this episode of Parallel Quest. Parallel Quest is a podcast of Steel Lake Studio. To find out a little bit more about us, head over to steellakestudio.com, where you can find out all about our storytelling endeavors, as well as how to support the show. Thank you so much. Today, we thank Audible for sponsoring this episode. Audible is a fantastic service that offers audiobooks, audio dramas, and a wide variety of Audible originals, which cover a variety of different genres and topics. If you like premium audio content and would love to get into an audiobook today of your choice, you can use our code for a free trial at audibletrial.com/parallelquest. Again, that's audibletrial.com/parallelquest. On today's episode of Parallel Quest, we are really excited to be talking about one of the greatest phenomenons of the late 90s, Pokemon, and specifically talking about the Pokemon movie. We hope you enjoy and get ready for this episode of Parallel Quest. And welcome to Parallel Quest, a podcast where two friends talk about the stories we love and tell our personal stories of the impact they have had on our lives. I'm one of your hosts, Cody Haggard, and alongside, or maybe more accurately said, across the internet from me, my great friend and co-host, Zach Butler. Zach, how are you doing today?
What's up, dude? I am pumped about this one. I gotta say, though, before we start off on all this, I was thinking about this on my way home today because we're coming off the holiday weekend, Memorial Day weekend, and I was thinking about on my way home because I went and saw my parents. I was thinking about on my way home, what are some crazy mashup video games that there could exist? Like if we took two video games and just smashed them together, and one that came to mind was if we took Mortal Kombat and okay. We took Animal Crossing.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So I was like, but both ways. It works kind of both ways. Like if you had a really violent Animal Crossing fighting game, which like some awesome finishing moves there, I think. Or you just had like the characters from, I think this is the more funny perspective, is having the characters from Mortal Kombat doing just menial tasks in a town trying to pay their mortgage off to some raccoon.
You got Scorpion in there. The raccoon wants his money. He's like, get over here.
shoots his thing
out. Just like, oh, he paid off your mortgage. Okay,
exactly.
You're good.
And I think what would be better is if you just kept the realistic graphics of Mortal Kombat and just put them in the playful, cartoony environment of Animal Crossing. So it's just this really realistic scorpion guy. And then just his characters walk, hello, neighbor. Get over here.
That's incredible, man. Like, the fact that you brought that up is hilarious because I have been trying to. Because I have adults who are, you know, our age, maybe a little bit younger, who are like hooked on Animal Crossing, who are in my place of business. And I'm trying to understand it. I know you and I have talked about this a little bit briefly, that I never got into the Animal Crossing thing. To me, it seems like a kid's version of Sims. And I know it's a little bit different. I know there is a lot more of a gamey side to it. But here's what I'm thinking, too, is what Animal Crossing does and what I know about it. Basically, for anyone who doesn't know, Zach could probably give a better explanation. So, Zach, if I miss out on any details here, because you played the one on the GameCube.
I played, yeah. Day, right? I had the OG, man. I played it when it came out for GameCube.
Okay. So if I miss out on anything here, let me know. But basically, you are this villager, and you are on an island. Is it an island you're on, or is it a continent?
It's somewhat ambiguous. It's there's always a seashore there, but I think it's more just like you're in a town. And in the original one, you could go to different towns, but they all kind of look the same, but they would have different characters and stuff in each of them. But the original one, and I think the new one also, just it always has a seashore because fishing is an element of the game, but it's a closed environment, if that's what you're asking.
Okay. All right. So it's like this small, I guess you could call it continent, island, village. You guys get the picture, but you then have to, you have a house and you got to kind of pay off this mortgage. This Tom Nook raccoon guy, who I've heard is a real, real tool. Like, he's not nice.
Real shyster.
And he's always got some ways trying to con you or whatever. And you got to collect resources for certain things. Mm-hmm. And I think the new hip thing with the newest one is it's online. So you can like visit other people's islands or towns and you can trade them. And so what I'm thinking here is, first of all, this game is designed for kids in mind. Like, it just is. And there's no doubt about it. It is Nintendo. They design games for the people who have parents with money who are going to pay for these games. Like, Nintendo is genius at that. And so what I'm thinking here, and Zach, you can speak your two cents about this, but in a world where, I almost like went into my trailer voice right there. Ooh. In a world, you know, but in a world where Minecraft exists and Terraria exists and all of these other sandbox games exist, which you can get for cheaper, which arguably have way more to do, and I would say probably even encourage a little more creativity, why is Animal Crossing still a big deal when those games exist? Do you think it is purely nostalgia? Do you think it is the Nintendo factor? What do you think? Like, this game is selling like crazy. It's almost selling better than any PlayStation 4 exclusive that was made. And those are like big games.
Right. I mean, I got my fill of Animal Crossing when I was 12 years old, I think is when I had it, somewhere around there. And the
that's gonna be salt in the wound for a 35
year old. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, for our listeners who do play it, that was my tenure playing it was when I was 12. I played it until I figured out that I could go into the GameCube system and manipulate the time, because the cool thing about the game, so it was kind of revolutionary at the time, or at least it was very new to me, was the game play was based on real time. So if it was summer in our world, it was summer in the video game. And then it would go through the seasons. It had holidays just like ours. So that was really cool, because certain unique events and items would be available on those days. So it kind of made you need, like, you needed to play it all the time in order to get all the items and get everything, which was a brilliant game design. But I figured out you could go into the GameCube and change the clock, the internal clock of the GameCube, which would make the game think that time had changed. So I would just go to all the holidays and basically get all the good items and stuff. And then after I did that, I was like, well, I kind of broke the game here, so I'm done. Like, I got all the things. But all that to say, that was exciting for a 12-year-old. Okay. I don't really understand, and I think maybe it's almost like a farming game, like when Stardew Valley came out, and it still is a massive hit. I think some of it is cultural. I think middle-class Americans have a lot of stress and pressure and financial strains, and there's just a lot going on in someone's life on a daily basis that I think it's a really nice escape to just go into a playful town that, yeah, you got to do some real life things, but they're not all that big of a deal. You have all the time in the world to pay Tom Nook off, and it's just one of many things you can do. You can go fishing whenever you want. You can dig for items, catch bugs. It's just all the stuff that you can kind of do in real life that you would think, oh, that would be nice, but you can do it in this video games. And you said it accurately. It's very much like a children's version of Sims with a little more gameplay element to it. But I think it's a huge stress reliever for a lot of people. And I know some people at my work, they recently bought it, and this was the first they ever bought it. They didn't buy the original one or the ones, I don't know if there were some in between that, but they bought the new one, and it was the first time ever playing it, and they are addicted. They will sit down after work, and then all of a sudden they look up and it's 3 a.m. and they've played Animal Crossing, and all they've done is rearrange their house for 8 hours. So it has that addictive element to it that you're kind of like, man, that's all you did for the whole time. But I think it's a big stress reliever for a lot of people. And I think that's why these games like Stardew Valley and Minecraft and Terraria, I think all of those have that stress relief element to it, where it's just, I can do whatever I want and I can mimic real life if I want to, or I don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand that, because I like to use, recently I've been kind of jumping in every once in a while and playing a little bit of Terraria to, you know, maybe half an hour at a time. And what's really cool is they just did their final update for the game. And they put in a mode called Journey Mode, which has fully customizable settings. So if you don't want to deal with mobs, you could immediately turn it to daytime and be like, hey, I'm working on my village right now. I just want it to be daytime for a little bit. Or, you know, if you start off with some better items so you can dig a little faster, so you're not spending hours and hours and hours just to have good enough armor to beat the first boss. Yeah. And if you have it, it's definitely worth jumping back on to see the quality of life changes they've made.
Dude, I love that game.
But it is like, because you can feel massive progress in a small period of time. Whereas, you know, any American right now who, if you went to college and you got college debt and you got a mortgage and you got all these other things, that it's like, holy cow, I'm in my 20s and these things are going to be with me until I'm almost 60. Well, that sucks. But that's how things have been for a long time. So any of our audience out there who's like older, who's getting to the point of like almost done with that, you probably listen to us and laugh like, you know,
yeah.
we know you whippersnappers. I get it. But I do understand the instant gratification of something like a game, where it's like, okay, wow, I went from nothing to a whole little village in a couple of weeks versus, you know, an entire lifetime. So I do get that. It's this, and I would love to see if there's any psychology with it, or anyone who's ever done a study on why exactly these types of games people get so into, because these aren't the types of games that a lot of people will just play casually. Like, your hardcore fans will rack up hundreds or thousands of hours in these games. And
it's,
I would love to
see a scary study amount on that. Of hours.
Yeah, because there's always something to get. Like, the mm-hmm. games are designed in such a way where there's always something to get. And
yeah, I mean, it is a brilliant way of constructing a game like that, where both time, real time, allows you to get certain things. And then now that they made it online, where I know you can go to, because there's some towns that have certain things like fruit and certain plants, and then you can go to another town and that's the only town that has that. So it invites you to expand that gameplay, and there's just so much to do in it. I know that because there's a ton to do in the first one.
I think
what was it at work, one of the girls was telling me about how many hours they've already logged into it, and I think it was close to 100 hours, and they haven't had it that long. It was 100 hours in a very short amount of time, where a lot of their free time I think was just in Animal Crossing. I think the most I've ever logged into a game is Skyrim. And I think it was around 70 hours. And I even looked at that. I don't like that Steam tracks your hours. I don't like looking at that when I log on. I go, man, I've spent that much time. But that's, I think, the most I've ever spent on a game.
Yeah, I've spent much more than that in games. And I would say you've probably spent more time than that in games, too. You should go back and look at your World of Warcraft clock sometime. Because you played that for a while, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should look at your game time in that.
Dude, I bet Civ 5, honestly, Civ 5 probably tops out.
Oh, man.
Really? Yeah, Civ 5. I don't even want to actually look at it now that I'm thinking about it.
Civ 5 is my I think, like, second most played game in my library.
Dude, there's no short way to play that game. That's the thing.
No, I mean, if you're going to finish a game, it's going to take you 5 hours. I mean, you're not going to finish it shorter than that. Might be longer.
Way. Even if you speed it up, man.
Yeah, I think my largest game in Steam is Lord of the Rings Online, the MMO. But that'll happen. I think it's in like the 300s. But when you play a game for 5 years, I mean, it racks up, you know? And that's why I quit playing MMOs, man. That's why I quit them.
That was it.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, we've talked a lot about video games. I had a story I wanted to tell. It still hasn't come back to me. But, Zach, if you got any stories from life before we get into our main topic, we could share some more. Or if you just want to dive straight in, this could be the time to do so.
I think I'm ready for it. I am ready Pokemon.
All right. So, we are ready to go. Zach's going to take us on.
Let's do this, man. So today, we are going to be talking about the wonderful world franchise event known as Pokemon. But more specifically, we're going to talk about Pokemon the first movie, which I will get to in just a second. But as we like to start all these podcasts, our main section, we like to do just a little bit of history, a little bit of background. So as most people know, Pokemon started in Japan. It was known as Pocket Monsters when it was over there. It was published in Japan in about 1996. When I was doing some research for this, the dates are kind of all over the place because there's different, like, Wikipedia would say one thing, and then I was on this website called, like, Bulbasaurpedia or something. It was like the Pokemon Wikipedia. So but they had some different dates on there. So I was like, well, do I take Wikipedia, which is kind of the world's internet, or the world's encyclopedia, or do I take Bulbasaurpedia, which is kind of a reliable source when it comes to Pokemon? So we're going to stick with 1996. Yes, yes. When it was first released for the Game Boy, it was created by Satoshi Tajiri, who also created Game Freak, which when you start up the video game, it's that little symbol that pops up that I always thought looked like a shark. But he created Game Freak, which is the company that pretty much made every single Pokemon game ever. And all the monsters and animals in Pokemon were designed by him and this guy named Ken Sugimori. An interesting fact, a lot of the Generation 1 Pokemon were, and a lot of people know this just from playing the game or just interacting with Pokemon, that a lot of them are based off of animals or insects. And that's because Satoshi was a big insect collector when he was a kid. And so a lot of the designs for the first generation monsters came based off of his love for collecting and looking into insects.
Just quickly, for a quick clarification for anyone who's not familiar with Pokemon, what exactly is a generation in Pokemon?
I guess I should talk about that. So over the years, Pokemon or the creators would release new rounds of Pokemon. So there'd be the first generation, quote unquote generation, was 151 Pokemon, and that was the first two games. And then after a while, they released a whole new set of monsters and insects and a whole new cast of characters that would add to the world. So each time that they did that, they would add a certain number. I think it was 100 the next time, which brought it to 250. Is it 100 every time?
I have no idea how many they add every time. I think they're on, if my memory serves me correctly. I know there's a lot of huge Pokemon fans out there, and I just want to say I like Pokemon. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan, but last number I saw when they were doing like promotional material for the newest game, I think they're close to like 700, but they're on like the 9th or 10th generation. So it hasn't been, obviously that math doesn't add up to 100 more every time, right? So it's So I don't know.
If you are one of those hardcore people, if you're one of those hardcore people, message us, drop us a line, let us actually know, because I'm with Cody. I was huge into it to the with the first two generations, and then I kind of petered off as I got older. So I have not been that up to date with the newer Pokemon, but pretty well versed in the first 251. And that one is significant, which I will talk about in a little bit. But the first generation, the first 101 or 151 Pokemon came out in the U.S. In 1998, when I was the ripe old age of 8, that is when Pokemon, in its original form, which was red and blue versions, came out for the Game Boy, which was 2 years after Japan released Pocket Monsters Red and Pocket Monsters Green. So they had some different colors. But red and blue were the first two games available for children for the Game Boy. And then what I had was the Game Boy Color.
What color did you get?
Lime green, bro.
Not a Game Boy Color. I don't care about your Game Boy Color. What Pokemon game?
Oh,
did you
a Pokemon. I was. Well, I had the lime green Game Boy Color, and I had blue was my first version. Blue's my favorite color. So my mom, actually, it wasn't my mom. It was my grandma. I finally whittled her down, broke her down, and she ended up buying me the game because I couldn't wait for Christmas. So my grandma, who, bless her heart, I kind of knew my way around her to get me things when I was that young. And so I finally cracked her and she bought me the blue version because I babysitted my cousins one night while it was my grandparents and my uncle and my aunt, and they were painting some room of the house, and they just didn't want the kids around while they were painting their new house. And I was the oldest cousin at the time. And so basically to pay me off to watch these kids, they said, or my grandma said, I'll get you the Pokemon game. And so I chose blue.
Nice.
Which is awesome.
Nice. I was red, so we could
rounded
out each other's collection, man.
Exactly. And that was one of the unique things about this game at the time was in order to get all the Pokemon in the game, you had to be able to trade with the other version. Because they didn't put all of them into the blue version and they didn't put all the Pokemon in the red version. So they made you brilliant once again, Game Freak eventually under the banner of Nintendo. They marketed it very well where you had to buy both versions. But basically when Pokemon hit the US shores, it just took the US by storm and subsequently the world. It spawned countless games and shows and books and toys and pretty much anything you could imagine. Clothes, lamps. There's Pokemon of it. Guarantee. It was a world phenomenon by then. It is the highest grossing media franchise of all time. And it's also the original series is the second best selling game series of all time. And can you guess, Cody, what the number one best-selling game series of all time is?
Game series.
Yes, game series. This is the second best. Pokemon was the second best. But what is the best?
Ooh, that's a tough one, man. I'm going to go out and say because it's so old and long-running, Mario? Super Mario?
My man, you nailed it. Yes.
All right.
Mario is the longest or this best-selling game series of all time, also owned by Nintendo. So they own the two best-selling games of all, or game series of all time, which is
nice.
Very, very nice for them. I think the last I saw, Pokemon was worth, like as a franchise, $90 billion. So at that point, it's Monopoly money. They just print it over there.
You said something very interesting that if it's true, I just want that to settle in with people. Pokemon is the highest grossing media franchise of all time.
Mm-hmm.
What is also considered a media franchise are the Marvel movies.
Yes.
Just let that set in for a second. Marvel movies were huge. You know, Star Wars is huge. You know, they got these huge things, but Pokemon makes more money.
This little than cartoon all those Pocket Monsters makes more money than all of that. Because, dude, they found a way to children's hearts in a way that these other two just couldn't or haven't yet. I think if you give Marvel enough time, maybe they'll catch up, but I don't know, man. Pokemon, it's a force. It's a force to be reckoned with.
They can spew out movies. I shouldn't say it like that. They can make movies.
It's okay if you do, though.
They can make movies at a faster pace than Game Freak can make video games. So eventually, I do think that a movie franchise will eclipse that. Because of just how quickly you can make a movie versus a game. Not that a movie's a quick process, but video games, especially a Pokemon game, they take a good like 5 years to make one of those. That's a long time, and you know that with a movie, especially when you have as much resources as Disney has, those they can turn one of those over in probably three years or less.
Yeah. But, I mean, the other thing Pokemon has going for it is a crazy amount of movies, which we'll talk about the very first one. But I saw the list of them, and I had no idea it went past four. But there are many, many, many past four. So
I didn't know it went past three. So,
yeah. So that tells you anything. That's about the time I fell off with Pokemon, and they just kept rolling. But many of us, as kids, we're introduced to Pokemon first through the video games, but then when the trading card game came out, oh, our poor parents' wallets. That was the best. That was like taking a drug when you were a kid, was collecting those cards and getting those foil packs, and just you could not wait to open them. And I even remember to this day the smell of opening a pack of Pokemon cards. Like, it had a distinct card smell, and it was the best thing ever when every now and then my mom would come home and she would surprise me with a pack of Pokemon cards. But it was published, the card game was published by Wizards of the Coast, which I found very interesting because they are also the ones that published two other insanely popular games. You know what they are?
Yeah. I absolutely do. They are Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons.
Yep. So these guys have Pokemon, Magic the Gathering, and Dungeons and Dragons. So they're not wanting
just
at all.
Bleeding money. Bleeding money at the behest of people with serious addiction problems.
Yes. They have the two most popular card games, I believe, of all time. Magic the Gathering and Pokemon. So
also, I will say this. I'm not making fun of anyone who plays any of those games. I actually really like Magic the Gathering. Just throwing it out there, just so you guys know.
Yes, I did a dabble in that. I definitely did. But Pokemon was kind of, and no offense for those who play Pokemon competitively, I'm sure you're awesome at it. I'm sure it's a thrill. I'm sure it's very complicated to some extent. But a lot of people say Pokemon is kind of the dumbed down version of Magic the Gathering. It's easier to understand, which needed to be. I mean, I started playing it when I was 10, so I couldn't understand all the complex rules of Magic the Gathering. And I mean, Magic, I still don't even understand that, but we're not here to talk about that. But I just want to say maybe one of these episodes, because I know you, especially your brother, is very into Magic, or was very into Magic. So maybe
they were, like my oldest brother was kind of like part of the OG Magic the Gathering run when it came out in the early 90s. So yeah, very much. I was kind of more like I played other people's cards. Like I never collected Magic, because you know I always knew somebody who had decks, and so I played someone else. And the thing about Pokemon too is, even though I had a ton of cards, I hardly played the game because even though I thought the game was kind of neat, most of my friends had no interest in playing. Like, it was all just about, like, trading and collecting cards because we all thought, you know, we were going to have these huge retirement funds because of our Pokemon binders, which, dude, you know. No, I looked through. I have like all my first edition holographics, my first run holographics in a little pouch, and I don't know what happened. Someone
must
have got
in there, man. There's some money sitting there.
No, there's not, because somebody's hands got into them and they're like bent and wrinkled. I swear.
Oh, no.
I swear when I was a kid, I took care of my stuff. So I don't know what happened to my first edition Zapdos that came in the very first starter set I ever had. Like one of the most iconic cards for me.
Oh.
But it's all like wrinkled and bent and stuff. And it's so sad to just look at it and be like, man, this was iconic for me.
Oh, that visibly hurt me hearing that.
I still
I really felt that.
I still at least have it. That's, yeah. At least there's that.
Well, I want to pause here for 1 second while we're talking about the card game, because you mentioned Zapdos, which is funny because it wasn't Zapdos, but it was Chansey, which was a rare card just like Zapdos, holographic. It was a, like I said, a rare card. But when the trading card game first hit, everyone in our elementary school was bringing cards to school because that's just what you did. You came to school, then during recess, you'd go out. It was like a bizarre market where everyone would just kind of line up and people would just be flinging cards and trading cards and wheeling deals. It was like going to some like Arabian marketplace and just like dealing cards over in the corner of the of the playground.
And but everybody ironically had that super duper rare Charizard at home, you know, wink wink, like, yeah,
exactly,
I got one at
yeah.
home, you know.
No, I don't exactly. But I remember this kid, he had the Chansey card. And I will always remember this because it was Chansey that ruined Pokemon at our school. He claims, and now this kid, from my memory, as an elementary school kid, was not the most put together, organized kid. He had a desk that was near me. It was always a mess. He never had a pencil. Like, his crayons were, he was one of those kids when they had the plastic box that had all your stuff in it, like your erasers and your pencils and your crayons, and like it would open up and it was just like everywhere. It would just, stuff would fall out. Like, it was never organized. Yeah, exactly. He never had anything. So this is the character we're dealing with here. And he claims, after one recess, he claimed that his Chansey card had been stolen during recess, during this wheeling and dealing of cards. And that he went to the principal. So it went all the way up, highest level of authority. It went all the way up. And I remember the day the principal made an announcement at the end of the day. And she was like, there will be no more Pokemon cards starting next Monday. And I think it was like Thursday. So we had like one more day to get all of our wheeling and dealing out. And so we had Pokemon ruined at our school because of this disorganized guy that I swear he probably went home and found it on his dresser and then just, he'd already ruined it. So he's like, oh, I can't tell anybody that I found it. Then everyone will hate me. But I know this kid has it still. I know it.
To this day, he still has.
And I'm still bitter about it because I got some really good cards out of that wheeling and dealing. So so much stuff got ruined at our school because of kids like that. We had Furbies taken away from our school because they wouldn't shut up. I think that was more part of it. But everyone brought their Furbies to school and then they would just talk all through class.
Whoever thought Furbies at school would be acceptable, though? Like, come on. Like, even if you put them in your backpack, you got them like, hello, holding. I'm hungry. I'm kind of
It really was like the whole room. You just hear it throughout the day, like these Furbies talking. But my parents, I wanted a Furby. So this is completely unrelated to Pokemon, but my parents, or I wanted a Furby so badly because everyone else in our classroom had it. And so they went out and they bought me a Furby, but it was a stuffed animal Furby. It wasn't even like the talking kind. So I was the only one in the classroom allowed to keep my Furby because it didn't talk.
That's amazing, man.
It's like, oh, that's great. Just kind of out of spite, I kept it on my table for a while, but then I get looks from everyone after they had to take theirs home and they weren't allowed to bring theirs back. So eventually I put mine away too. But for a while there, I had the only legal Furby.
You got the plushie Furby.
Yes. Yeah. But anyway,
that'd be getting like a rare Charizard that your parents printed you off on the computer and
exactly
it to you. Like, that's the card.
Slap that on some cardboard. There you go. There's your Charizard.
Bang. Why didn't we do that as kids? Like, why not? Just put it in the binder. It would have looked fine.
It would have looked perfect. Dude, but the thing is, I played the game. So that was kind of my next story here was I played the game a lot, the card game, to the point that my friend, same friend who recorded Dragon Ball Z on his VHS, same friend. He comes up a lot in these stories. But we would go.
Has he listened to any of these? Do you know?
I don't know. He might have. He called me the other day, but I didn't. I just saw that he called. He might. I like to think that he called me because he's like, dude, this podcast was awesome. Thank you so much for putting me in it. But I don't think he
put him in the spotlight. Like,
to play board games.
Right. Exactly.
So, but
gets out of the brass tacks.
Exactly. So him and I got really into it. We played. I got my friends into it. We would go to Toys R Us and we would play in tournaments there. And it was so cool because in the video games, the objective of you as the main character would be to go to gyms and fight your way through the gym. And then you would fight the gym master. And then he would, if you beat him, he would give you a badge. And so the objective in the game was to collect all the badges. And then once you got all the badges, you could go fight even more powerful people known as the Elite Four. And then at the very, very end, spoilers, but if you haven't played Pokemon by this point, come on, you fight your rival for it all. And then if you beat your rival, you're the champion. So how Toys R Us had it set up is you got a little notebook, which was your Pokedex, which in the video game you have a Pokedex, which tells you all about Pokemon and stuff. But in the Pokedex, you would have little stamps. And every time you won against an opponent, one of the store clerks would come over and stamp your little Pokedex. And that meant you got a badge. But it was a little different. So in order to earn your first badge, which I think it's when you earned a badge, you got a free pack of Pokemon cards. And so in order to not just be handing out Pokemon cards all the time, because they were selling off the shelves like if it was like the apocalypse or COVID and it was toilet paper, it was selling that fast. Like they made it so you had to get, I think it was either 15 or 20 stamps in order to get your first badge.
What?
Which was a total ripoff.
That's insane.
It was so much. I remember looking at it and being like, well, I'm pretty good at this game. Like I win a lot of times playing my friends. So I should do this pretty quickly. I didn't win a single game at Toys R Us. Like everyone, because I was 10, 11 years old at the time. There were 15, 16, 17 year old kids playing this game, even adults. And they would just wipe the floor with me. Like they didn't even give me a chance. No hope.
Gotta love the adult who comes in with his deck he built on eBay.
Exactly.
And just smashing 10-year-olds who don't even know how the internet works.
And I didn't know how deck building worked. Like I didn't have a deck that was built for fighting a certain type. I just picked Pokemon I liked in the show and liked in my video game and put him in my deck. And that's just how I ran with it. So suffice it to say, I didn't really play all that much at Toys R Us, but I was that into Pokemon that I would go to Toys R Us and play Pokemon. So anyways, we're here to talk about Pokemon the movie. I know we kind of got off on some tangents there, but
it's all right. That's fun stuff. That's good time. Good memories.
But we're here to talk about Pokemon the first movie, which it hit theaters in the US on November 10th or 12th. Once again, I'm going from two sources here and they both told me two different dates. So somewhere between November 10th and November 12th of 1999, Pokemon the first movie hit. And I remember seeing that trailer for the first time when I saw The Iron Giant. Do you remember that movie?
One of the best animated movies ever made, for sure.
Such a good... We will have to do an episode on that. That was an incredible experience. But I remember seeing the Pokemon, the first movie trailer before that movie. And I remember, although the Iron Giant was amazing, I was like, I just want to watch Pokemon. I just want to go see Pokemon the movie. So I was 9 years old and I was deep into my Pokemon addiction by this point. I was not recovering or anything. I was not a recovering addict at this point. I was just all in. Just give me all the Pokemon straight to the bloodstream, man. So there was absolutely nothing going to keep me from seeing this movie, no matter what. And so the night the film came out, I went with three of my friends from elementary school, and their mom drove us there, and the whole way we brought our decks, because just when you were 10 years old and there was Pokemon happening anywhere, you brought your cards. Didn't matter what you were doing. You could be going to a baseball game to watch your brother and you're bringing your Pokemon cards because somebody there, guaranteed somebody there, also has Pokemon cards and you're going to want to trade with them and you're going to play with them. Mainly, you just want to look at the other person's Pokemon cards. But we brought our cards because it was Pokemon the movie and we knew this was where the fanatics were going to gather and there was going to be Pokemon galore. Everyone was going to have their cards, guaranteed. So we roll up and his mom lets us out and we're all gathered outside the front. And it is, I mean, this is probably, other than when I saw Lord of the Rings with my dad, this is probably the most packed I've ever seen a movie theater with just fans of the movie coming out. And I remember we got in there in the herd of people. And the coolest thing that they did to promote this movie was you got a Mew card. Mew is a very, very rare Pokemon, for those who don't know. He's a super rare Pokemon, one of the most powerful Pokemon. He's basically like the golden snitch of Pokemon. It's very hard to get, very difficult, but if you got it, you're set. So they promoted the movie by, if you bought a ticket, you got this promotional card. And so we all knew about it, and we thought we were getting Mew. That was the rumor at school, was you got Mew, which you did. But what the card actually was, once I got it, was Mew, but it was like this purple relic-looking Mew, and all that didn't have any English on it. It was all in symbols and stuff because they were going for it, because Mew's this ancient creature, so they were really playing off that. And so it was a completely unusable card, which I should have known maybe at 10 that they weren't just going to give the most powerful Pokemon out to every single kid that went and saw the movie, because then if you played competitively, like, that would be completely unfair. So I got it and I was like, man, this stinks, dude. Like, this you can't even read this card. So later on, we just made up powers for it. And it was obviously going to be the most overpowered thing ever. So it was like, it did 100 damage and automatically killed Pokemon. Like, it was the best card, but it was just a collector's item. But it was really cool. Everyone got it. And I remember before we went in, my one friend, he was the oldest out of all of us that were seeing it. He was talking with this guy, another kid, and there's some talks happening and some wheeling and dealing and some interesting cards because they both obviously brought their cards. And so I remember he struck up a deal that after the movie, they were going to meet up outside the parking lot and they were going to trade. He was going to trade his holographic Gengar for, and this is your Pokemon, for the other kid, Zapdos. And it was probably of my career of Pokemon, the biggest trade I've ever seen. Like, two holographic cards getting traded, two really powerful Pokemon being traded. This was this was like LeBron James being traded for Michael Jordan kind of thing happening for me. It was just like, whoa, huge trade, man. Massive trade. So this that kind of set the tone for the night. We're going in and we're like, okay, this huge trade's gonna happen. We're gonna see the best movie in the world. This is gonna be amazing. And so we get in there and we watch the movie, and the movie is broken into three parts. I don't know if you remember this, but oh, you just watched the 3D release, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it still broken into the two parts, possibly three? Does it still have Pikachu's Vacation at the very beginning, which is like the 20-minute trailer or whatever?
No. It's just the main
The main movie Mewtwo yeah. Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Okay. So when it first came out, it was awesome because you basically got to see two movies in one. There was a short before it all, kind of how Pixar does little shorts before their movies. Pokemon did the same thing, but it was a much longer short. And it was called Pikachu's Vacation. And that was really awesome because right when we saw the movie, the second generation, I think, was just coming out or just come out. It was on that cusp of the second generation of new Pokemon were coming out. So, I mean, to a 9-year-old, this was like, oh my gosh, more Pokemon. Like, I don't even have the first 150, but it was more Pokemon were coming out. So in Pikachu's Vacation, I remember watching it and there were Pokemon that weren't even out yet appearing in the show. And it was like, oh my gosh, that's going to be one. That's going to be one. Oh, and like everyone, all the kids, all the 10-year-olds in the world were at this theater just cheering them on and like, what's that? Like, you can imagine what a whole room full of 10-year-olds would sound like yeah. in a yeah. movie they absolutely adore. So we were, I remember watching Pikachu's Vacation and it sets it up for the main movie, which is technically called Mewtwo Strikes Back, but the whole Pokemon movie is just called Pokemon the First Movie, which was kind of a lame title if you think about it. But
I think it was originally marketed as Pokemon the Movie, and then when they came out with the second one, they might have started calling it Pokemon the First Movie. I could be making that up, but I swear as a kid it was just called Pokemon the Movie, and then they did
a title
swap. I always
called it that. Yeah, I always called it that, but every poster I was looking at like this weekend doing the research, it always said the first movie. So you might be right. They might have just retroed a lot of them and were like, this is the first one.
Okay,
except the second one was Pokemon 2000. So
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, if our listeners know, please message us. Let us set the record straight here.
Set the record straight.
Yeah. But what I didn't know, because it never got released in the U.S. theaters, was there after Pikachu's Vacation, there was another even longer short. So you basically had three movies. There was an even longer short called Origin of Mewtwo. And it was basically an origin story for Mewtwo, who, for those of you who don't know, Pokemon the movie centers around Mewtwo. He's a clone of Mew, which, as we established earlier, is the most powerful Pokemon. So he's a clone, and he's the antagonist of the movie, and he's also super, super powerful. But they in the Japanese release of the movie, they kind of take you through how Mewtwo was created, where in the American release, they take that out because apparently the themes were a little too adult, and probably rightfully so. Cloning was still very foreign to a 10-year-old. So we're like, sure, man, he's just like Mew. But they kind of referenced it in the movie, how he was created. But I guess on the DVD release of the movie later on in America, you got to see the origin of Mewtwo. So they put all three on the DVD release. But
now
you never saw it if you were in theaters.
Now that part, I believe that that's how Mewtwo Strikes Back does start off. It kind of has a narrative that plays over and tells you about him being cloned and being a creation, and you kind of get
yeah.
to hear
so
his mind.
Apparently, this is like a longer backstory The scientist, Dr. Fuji or whatever, the guy who clones him. It's more of his backstory and why he chose to do it. And so I guess you just get more. I know you do get his backstory of how he's cloned, but I think there's more to it that they show in this Origin of Mewtwo short, at least from my research. I've never seen it because I didn't buy the DVD, unfortunately. I did from religiously watching the show, because the show was always on in the morning before I went to school.
Yeah.
And so I would always come down and I'd catch an episode right before school, which I don't know. Do they do that anymore, like early morning cartoons for kids?
I gotta be honest, man. Like, I have no clue, but I think a lot of the way it works now is because most of your cable packages are going to have, like, multiple cartoon channels. So now I think it's basically, if you want to watch cartoons for your kids, you just go to the channel,
pop
right?
It on. Like, I guess that makes sense.
Just throw on like Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon. What was, but like you're talking about, I remember Pokemon. It was on whatever the network was, had the morning cartoons.
I think it was WB, which was, that's going way back.
Yeah, because I remember I liked watching that. And it was weird because my brother, who was, you know, he's like 5.5 years older than me. He actually kind of got into it, too. He was like, yeah, this is a pretty good show. And I was like, oh, man, my brother thinks Pokemon's cool. So it's definitely cool.
Because it is cool. But I knew from watching the show a little bit about Mewtwo because he's briefly shown in the show before the movie released when Gary Oak loses to Giovanni, who's one of the gym leaders. He's kind of the real bad gym leader, one of the big bad guys. So your rival, Gary, or Ash's rival, Gary, loses to Giovanni in one of the episodes when Giovanni uses Mewtwo. And Mewtwo is basically OP. He is ridiculously strong, uses psychic ability to basically do whatever he wants because apparently he can manipulate time too. Like, I just don't understand. There's a lot of plot holes in this movie, but he can manipulate time and does psychic powers and all this stuff. So he kicks Gary's butt pretty hard. But it's one of the last episodes you see before the movie came out. And so I remember seeing that episode and I thought it was really cool that they kind of made that connection, or they did make that connection in the movie. That Mewtwo was used by Giovanni to fight his battles before Mewtwo goes off on his own. But the movie was awesome, man. I don't know what you thought about it, but as a 10-year-old, I thought it was the coolest thing I had ever seen. I loved the new characters that were in it. It was cool to see the movie, because the movie was drawn and the colors were deeper, I felt like, and it was drawn better because it was for a movie. So just the seeing Ash and Pikachu and all his friends and everything on the big screen was awesome. But I don't know, what did you think of it when it came out?
So when the movie came out, I remember being super excited for it and just begging my parents to take me. And I remember my dad ended up taking me. I remember getting my promo card and just being super excited. I remember the thing I was most excited about was to be able to see, because the show, it was kind of one of those shows where you kind of got to see whatever they played in the morning. And they didn't always play them in order. I feel like the order was kind of off, at least from what I remember. Maybe I was just out of the loop. And I was just so excited to see Ash with all my favorite Pokemon, you know, the Blastoise and Charizard and Pikachu, obviously, having all of like his big Pokemon in this movie. And I just was super excited about that. And I do remember them teasing, like revealing something about new Pokemon. I do remember that being a thing within the promotional. It was one of those things that was just super exciting. And at this time, I don't think I had played or received the actual video game yet. So my experience with Pokemon was the cartoon and the card game. So I ended up not getting the Pokemon video game till like the next year. I remember I didn't get it until I was in like third grade. I got Red. I got Red like right before Gold and Silver came out. So I got a story about the Game Boy game that we'll get into in a second. But
so did you know about the video games at that time? Had you like seen anyone play them, or did you know about them? Or
I only had
the cards.
Yeah, I knew about them, and I got Red. It was before Yellow came out, because Yellow hadn't come out, but it was like I got it late. Like I was one of the last ones out of all my friends to get it. And it was, I loved it. I loved it. I do have a story about it, but yeah, I knew about it. I think I had friends who had it, but you know, my parents had, my parents had gotten through a divorce. We were going through a move, and there was just a lot of things going on at this stage in life. And I remember my dad took me to see Pokemon, and I just remember after the movie was over, this is one of my takeaways. My dad didn't get it. He didn't get Pokemon.
I don't get it.
It didn't like register in his mind why kids like this. And I remember thinking like, oh man, this is a great movie. Like this is one of my dreams come true. And my dad is just kind of walking away like, I don't understand this. Because if you think about it, if you have no background knowledge of Pokemon, if you don't know anything about Pokemon and you are thrown into this movie, this movie is essentially the season finale of an entire season of a show, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's not really like a origin story in any way, shape, or form. So that's when true. You think about
it's like it, watching Firefly the movie.
Coming in, like... Coming in cold turkey to the Pokemon movie. First of all, you're going to a movie called Pokemon, and you're like, what in the heck does this word mean? And then the main character's name is Ash Ketchum, and he has a bunch of monster friends called Pikachu, Charizard, Blastoise, Squirtle, Bulbasaur, Venusaur, Sparrow, Pidgey, like Pidgeotto, like all these different names. And you can just imagine like having no background information. You've never seen a playing card of these things in your life. You haven't played a game. You haven't watched a television show, and you're thrown into this thing. And it's probably just like, this is all gibberish to me. You know,
they're speaking another language.
And what's with the guy who never opens his eyes? Why are his eyes always closed?
They're always closed. You know?
How can he see where he's going? It doesn't make any sense.
Why does the cat talk, but none of the other ones talk?
Right, yeah. Why are the bad guys always trying to rhyme things? Like,
there's a catchphrase that I don't get.
There's all sorts of things. When you think about it, Pokemon is one of those franchises where if you don't get into it as a kid and you don't dig into it, like there's a very short window of when Pokemon can like set its impact in you. And once you are outside of that window, it's all just like, this is nonsense. If it gets you at the right time, you'll always love it. Like I'm 29 years old and this is a movie I sat down and watched with my kids. And I was like, this is still good. You know, I still like this.
This is still good. Yes.
And so it's fun because it takes you back to just to remember the psychotic time of Pokemon. Like my stepdad, when he was dating my mom, would literally go to Target every Tuesday because he was told that they got shipments in every Tuesday.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and this is, you know, when you're dating someone and they've got kids, you want to get the kids on the good side. So Jim, he would go to Target every Tuesday and get me like 3 packs of Pokemon cards if they were in stock. And I remember like coming home from school on Tuesday and I would see his Cadillac in the driveway and I'd be like, yes, okay, let's do this. And then I'd open them up, you know, throw the energy cards out the window.
Who cares about it? I got plenty of those.
Start going through the cards, seeing if I got a holographic, and disappointed if he just kind of gave me the look like, man, I couldn't get there early enough, you know. Like Jim will tell you to this day, like he knew the store clerk by name, like the guy who stocked the shelves, you know. They were pals.
The truck driver driving him in.
He kind of give him the thumbs up or thumbs down. Going down the aisleway. Man, just like, it was madness, man. Like,
oh, it really was, man. Cards.
And
it really was.
The movie, it was one of those things that I loved it, didn't click with my father whatsoever.
But now that you say that, I don't recall what my friend's mom ever said about, like, I don't even know if she was in the theater, to be honest. Like, she might have gone somewhere else for the 2 hours and then came back and got us, because I don't remember her. In my memory, she's not there at all. It's just a theater full of kids. Maybe there weren't any parents there. I don't know, because you're right. Like, they would just be like, this is gibberish, but they like it and they just go nuts for it.
Exactly.
But so the movie apparently kind of segueing into the critical reception of it, the critics did not like this movie. And that was news to me literally this weekend, because I have had no reason to research it until now, but I did not know that adults did not like this movie. They basically said, so Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 3.75 out of 10.
Wow. Which
I think it's a little harsh, man. Like, you got to take into account who this movie's made for. I mean, you're totally right. This movie was made for fans. It was a completely fan-made movie. They did not want to, they didn't give you backstory. They didn't give you why things were named certain. Like, they just were like, we know our demographic. And if they're fans like we think they are, they're going to know all this stuff that we don't need to explain anything. So we're just going to move right on. And I think it's a little unfair to relate to rate it 3.75 out of 10. But a critic said, and I thought this was kind of silly, audiences other than children will find very little to entertain them. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense, because it's made for kids. Like, I don't think an adult would really appreciate a corny kid movie. Although I know the movie tried to bring out some adult themes, and I know it tried to deal with some philosophical issues, but I was 9 years old. Like, I wasn't going to understand that. No kid in there was going to understand that. We just wanted to see our favorite Pokemon and our favorite characters fight on the big screen. We didn't care. I mean, it could have been Pokemon Stadium on a big screen, and we would have loved it the same, because we just wanted to see Pokemon fighting each other. And so we talked about this earlier, but I thought it was kind of funny that one of the themes in the movie, so if you haven't seen the movie, the plot is basically, which I guess we should have talked about this first, but the plot is basically Ash and his friends are invited to this island to basically do battle with some of the best Pokemon trainers around, and there's some guy on there that's supposed to be like the best. And then when they get there, they realize it's Mewtwo, and he tricked them, and he basically is just there so he can clone all their Pokemon. And so through all that, they have to kind of fight Mewtwo. And Mew shows up at one point and kind of helps them out. So that's basically the plot, honestly. It really is that simple. But within all that, they tried to bring out this philosophical element of nonviolence and, like, why are we fighting? Because, like, you and I, even though we're clones, we're the same. We have the same cause in the world. Like, we have the same objective. And Mewtwo's just misunderstood because no one's loved him right. And those are all well and good if they're established and they're done well. But they're being done in a franchise that's basically built on monsters fighting each other. So,
yeah,
it didn't really make sense to go for the pacifist theme when your entire franchise is built on fighting monsters.
Right.
So I thought that was, and I didn't get that at the time because I was nine and I was just there for the fighting. But later on, when I watched it when I was a little older and then reading about it this weekend, I realized those themes are pretty present in the movie, and I can understand why parents and critics would be confused as the message of the movie, because the whole point of Pokemon is to level up your monsters by fighting and then fight some more in order to earn some badges and then fight some more in order to be the best. And now you're telling kids, hey, don't fight. Like, we're all the same. Didn't really hit audiences well there.
Yeah.
So it seemed a little contradictory, the anti-violence message in Pokemon, but didn't matter to me. I was nine. It was awesome. I loved every bit of the movie. I thought it was so cool at the end. And it was probably, I think even still in my memory, and I kind of don't want to watch the scene as I'm older because it probably won't be as powerful as I remember it. But when Ash, spoilers at this point, but when he turns to stone, because he gets hit by a psychic blast, which I guess turns you to stone in the Pokemon world. He turns to stone, trying to stop the fighting, and it's this big heroic act. And I remember Pikachu is his best friend, his faithful companion from the very first episode. They've been through everything, and Pikachu's standing over him, and he's like trying to thunderbolt him back to life. And I think I cried the first time ever in a movie, in the Pokemon movie, watching that scene. Because it's so sad. He's just like, Pika! And he's like trying to shock him back to life, and nothing's working. And then everyone starts crying. And then Pikachu cries, and his tear falls off his cheek and hits Ash. And then all the other Pokemon start crying, and then Ash is resurrected, because I guess Pokemon tears work like that.
Yeah. But
doesn't matter. Don't care about the logic. It was a powerful moment. And in that moment, Mewtwo then realized, you know what? I probably shouldn't do this anymore. Let's all be friends.
I probably shouldn't do this. Let's not.
I'm done doing this. And then he completely, like, days, like, just completely OPs everything and resets the timeline. He just takes everything that just happened and made it not ever happen, and puts Ash and all his friends back where they started when the movie first started, and wipes their memory, which is the most overpowered move of any Pokemon ever. I don't understand how Mewtwo even lost if he had that kind of power in his back pocket to just completely warp the space-time continuum and completely erase everyone's memory of everything that just happened. But I guess that's fine. He did it. He did do it. And so that is how the movie goes. It was awesome. But to continue my story that I was telling earlier about the kid and my friend and the epic trade that was going to happen. So we get out of the movie.
Trade's got to go right. down.
Yeah. So the epic trade, we get out of the movie. All the kids are out and about. Just everyone's cheering and like talking about it. And parents are like, probably like your dad, I don't get it, but okay.
Why do kids like this?
Yeah, why do kids like this? They all got these purple cards with a mouse looking thing on them now. And so we get outside, and my friend's searching around, and he's searching around, and he's looking for him. And one by one, this crowd starts disappearing until we are the only ones left, at least in my memory, that's how it goes. And then his mom pulls up and is like, come on, we're going home. And the trade never happened. That was
never
it. Never went down, man. And I was let down. I wasn't even involved, but I was let down because I wanted to see that happen. So I remember even the highest high of the night kind of fell a little bit, but it was still awesome. But it was dampened a little bit because the epic trade didn't happen. But that was my first experience with the Pokemon movie. I absolutely loved it. I absolutely loved Pokemon.
Man, that is an epic tale of a night at the theater. Like it was.
It was kind of an all-American experience at the theater.
I'll tell you what, if you don't hear that story and think like, man, you know, movies, stories, they just have power. They've got power. Then that assures me. Because that is a very detailed memory from a long time ago, man. That was like 21 years ago, you know?
It is a very long time ago, but I remember it like it's yesterday, man.
That's incredible. Yeah. I love that. I love that. And I think one of the things that's interesting about Pokemon as well is there is just something so simple and charming about it. It just draws huge audiences. Like, think about how Pokemon Go exploded a few years ago. People who, when Pokemon the movie came out, couldn't care less about who Pikachu was, you know, they're going around playing Pokemon Go with their friends, you know.
It's
a very interesting thing because Pokemon Go kind of hit a bunch of different demographics, and it was kind of weird in that way, but it just has this charm about it. It has this attraction to it, and you know, the movie was kind of one of those things. I mean, obviously the movies must have done well. They made tons and tons and tons.
Oh, so many of them. So many that I didn't even look to see how many.
And something I will say, though, about the Pokemon movie is one thing where its influence kind of stretched into, and if anyone's interested in seeing a Pokemon movie, I don't know how much I would recommend watching Pokemon the first movie, but but I do think that Detective Pikachu is a rather good movie. I saw that with my kids. I actually took my two boys to the theater to see it, and I was kind of on the fence about it because they, you know, I didn't know how it was going to go. And there was a couple of parts where they were a little scared, but it kind of takes a lot of the themes from the Pokemon movie and does it much better. The story is very engaging. It's funny. It's entertaining. Ryan Reynolds is the voice of Pikachu, and it's hilarious. So I actually think that that's a movie that could make someone who's not into Pokemon whatsoever kind of see the charm of it, right? It's because that's done really well. It takes everything that's awesome about Pokemon, puts it in a movie that's a lot more universal, able to be liked by many, many more people. I think the movie actually did decently well with critics. And it's great. It has a lot of the same themes as Mewtwo Strikes Back. It has a lot of the overtones, and it's very good. And I remember just kind of getting out of the theater. My wife and I were both like, that was actually good. That was just kind of weird, you know? We were kind
of
expecting.
Now, does the 3D element of it make it a little less charming, or does it take away? Because you're going from hand-drawn cartoons where the colors are not very realistic to, and I noticed like the movie tried to make the animals or the Pokemon a little more, I guess, realistic in a way, but still trying to maintain the cartoony-ness of it.
The realistic type of CGI, I would definitely say that for the most part, it worked very well. Like, Pikachu is animated very well. And even though he doesn't look exactly like what we're used to in seeing Pikachu look like, it's done so good, especially with the main character, which it should be, right? It's just a big blockbuster film budget. But it works for a majority of the movie. I can't think of anywhere where it was totally off. But and if I did say something, it'd be kind of a spoiler. But I'm not gonna go there. But anyway, I would recommend it. If you get a chance to see it, if it shows up on a streaming service or it's a cheap rental or something, it's definitely one of the ones that will probably surprise you.
I have wanted to see it because it did catch my interest. Yeah, it caught my interest when I saw the trailer. But yeah, so you have some stories for us though.
Oh,
about
sure.
Pokemon,
sure.
Right?
First thing I'll say is that if you're interested in the plot line of Mewtwo Strikes Back and you have Netflix, you could go on right now and see a remastered version of it. And this was something that was kind of a big moment for me as a dad to kind of see my kids start to like Pokemon as kids. And they have a little bit of familiarity with it because now it's such a huge franchise. It's kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
But it still works. Like the same exact movie, just with updated animation, it still works. For me, I didn't think it was quite as charming as like the hand-drawn traditional Pokemon. But since I haven't seen it in so long, it could be one of those things where in my mind, it looks amazing. But if I were to go back and watch it, maybe it doesn't look as amazing. Because I was actually reading some of the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes that, like, and one of the things that's criticized is it's really bad animation. So I would really like to kind of see it now. And as I remember the show, and I've seen the show as an adult, like, there is a lot of, in the show, there's a lot of what is what I would call like budget animation, basically making things, you know, less frames to do things and not spending as much time on stuff. Cause you got to do a show where you have a 100 episodes in a season. You're not going to have a huge budget. Cause Japanese animation, they've got a ton of talent. You know, go watch a Studio Ghibli film and just be blown away. And anyway,
but when you're cranking out hundreds of episodes, you're probably taking some shortcuts.
Exactly. But yeah, it's something that could be experienced still. And something I'll say about Pokemon just in general, for people who might be listening to this and be like, it still doesn't make sense to me. The phenomenon is something that as a kid, there's just something so enticing about it. It is kind of feels like when you play a Pokemon game, or if you're a card collector, you are kind of going on your very own journey to be the very best, like no one ever was. And just like the song says, but it, you know, for me, Pokemon Red, it's kind of like this thing in my mind that I love. And I know I said I was kind of late to the game with this, and I know we mainly are talking about the movie here, but I got to talk about the video game for a second, because I had just finished the third grade and I played Pokemon Red a lot. And in the summer of third grade, I decided, you know what? I'm going to delete my game and play it all over again. And so I also had to go to this like daycare program during the summer of third grade. And, you know, my parents both worked outside of the house. And I remember just going to this thing like embittered every single day, because I didn't want to do it. I did not want to do it. I just wanted to be home in my neighborhood, do my thing. I even told my parents, I was like, I'll stay home all day. I won't go outside. I'll go inside. I'll do whatever. Just don't make me go to this thing. And I hated it, dude. It was so terrible. I remember the kids, we would fight over who would be able to play the Super Nintendo.
And see,
you know, taking turns playing Super Indiana Jones. It was this nightmare. It's just too many kids, not enough staff. I'm pretty sure the staff hated kids, and it was terrible.
It's like the eagle's nest, that giant eagle, man.
Right. And then one day they encouraged us to bring our Game Boys to the daycare. Now, most people at the daycare had Game Boy Pockets or Game Boy Colors, which, those did just fine, and they could fit in your pocket. I had a honking original Game Boy. I throwed it around with me, man. OG
TI-84 in your pocket.
This thing was no joke. Take an iPhone and double its thickness and widen it by probably double the size.
Take a cinder block, and you're pretty close.
You got an OG Game Boy. And I remember I used to wear jean shorts to daycare, because they were the only shorts I had where the Game Boy could fit in the pocket. So I have this huge block I would carry around with me. And this thing took 4 double A's. So, you know, I had the block in one pocket and backup double A's in the other. So this thing, though, this advent, this new thing where we were allowed to bring our Game Boys, all these kids who we would fight, argue, whatever, every single day, all of a sudden we're allowed to bring our Game Boys, and it just so happens we all have Pokemon. In between all of us in the day program, whatever, we were all able to trade every single Pokemon, so that at the end of the summer, we all had all 151 Pokemon. Yes, because we all had Mew, because there was this one kid who had, you know, unfiltered internet access at home.
Yeah, who was a game shark.
Who was able to you know, figure out how to manipulate the game to get Mew. And I remember you had to do all these like really like weird things, these weird trades. You had to like trade these little digital whatever thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I remember my I wish I still had my copy. My copy of Pokemon Red, it has all 151 Pokemon. I don't think I leveled them all up, but I remember that was one of the things where I hated that place, but it turned into a haven. Once we were told, bring Pokemon with you, as I was showing up in my jean shorts and my brick in one pocket and my bullets in the other. And
it's like finding El Dorado, man. That is incredible. I never came close to that. That is awesome.
So, you know, there is, I think there was only like two kids with a link cable, though. You know, you knew the kids that came from wealthier.
And then they were always janky and they never worked right. You couldn't ever get them to connect. And they were 27 feet long. It was just completely impractical to trade.
But it's so cool when something that you think you do as like a closet nerd, you find out kind of a lot of people like it. And it makes a big difference. So that was cool. I'll always remember that.
It really
that
did bring people together.
Yeah.
It really did.
For sure.
And also ruined school, but still brought us together out on the playground. Brought a lot of people. Yeah. Ugh, I'll never forgive that kid.
Wheeling and dealing, man. Just
that's right.
Just I don't want your cards. Venusaur. Everyone had Venusaur. No one had Blastoise or Charizard. You ever notice that? Everyone had Venusaur.
Dude, my neighbor behind my house had a holographic Charizard. And I tried one time. I said, I will give you 100 cards for your Charizard. Any of your choice, 100. That's how desperate I was for Charizard. Man, I was like, I'll give you all of it. And I almost had him, man. I almost had him. And he said no. He was like, no, I don't like them all. And then I try to convince him that my Magikarp could beat his Charizard. And I had this whole speech planned out. And I was like, see, man, like it only has Splash, but like your Charizard, it takes a bunch of time to like power up. And like by the time it does that, I could have like all this other stuff going on. And basically, I just try to give him the worst deal possible, and he immediately shot that down. That wasn't a good one. So I never had Charizard. My neighbor did, and I was always jealous of him.
So in your circle of friends, how much was a Charizard worth, you know, on the rumor mill?
I think at the time it's probably like $150.
Oh, really?
I mean, that someone on the bus said that one time. And we're like, oh, dude. At the time, it was probably $50. I don't know. Yeah.
I remember in our circle of friends, like the first edition Charizard was in like the tens of thousands range.
Tens of thousands. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The rumor mill was strong with that one. And wow. I was just hating on Venusaur. If you had a first edition base set Venusaur, it's actually worth like $5,000 right now in mint condition.
It's really worth that?
Yeah. If it's I'm looking at it on eBay right now. Dude. Or and Charizard's worth
$4,600. Oh, these are paper cards.
I know,
that's insane, dude. I almost had one for 100 cards. Man.
It's got to be a first edition one, though. I don't think anything past first edition were worth much.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know when he had it.
I've got a first edition Machamp in the garage, which I think everybody else had as well. Let's see how much that guy's got. $7.38. There we go.
There we go.
Guys, I'm $7.38.
Got $7 sitting out of your garage, dude.
You know, I trade that bad boy in. I cover a month of podcast hosting. Yeah, we're good to go.
Yeah, man, that's a Chick-fil-A sandwich meal right there.
There you go. There you go. You would know about that.
Yeah. Anyway, so I got one more story before we wrap up here, man. And this is a very recent story.
All right.
So this past weekend, I was at my, like I said before, I was at my parents' house for the Memorial Day weekend. And I love their house. They got a new house over in Akron, and it's a nice, big, spacious house. And on the second floor, there's this loft area, and it has these recessed built-in bookshelves, and it's awesome. I love it. I want one of these one day, but there's two of them, and they're just filled with all of my dad's books and my mom's books and my books from college that I haven't brought to my house over here in Pittsburgh yet. But I like going up there and just reading through them all, because I always find a new title here and there that I'm like, oh man, I want to read that again, or oh, I haven't read that. And so I was looking on one of the shelves, and in the middle of the shelf, I saw something yellow. I was like, oh, what is that book? And I get closer, and upon further inspection, I see it says Pokemon on the side. was like, oh, did I have a Pokemon book here? This is awesome. Like, we're talking about this week. So I like tiptoe up, or I get on my tiptoes and I reach up and I pull it down. And I kid you not, man, I found an unopened Pokemon Yellow Game Boy video game. Completely like still in its wrapping, like its original plastic wrap, the original Pokemon Yellow Game Boy video game. And I was lost. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? This thing has not been opened. Apparently, what had happened was my grandma must have bought me and my brother Pokemon Yellow, and my parents must have bought it for us at the same time. And so she just never like took it back. She just kept it. She just put it somewhere in her house and just got lost forever. So recently my mom was there and she brought it back with her on a whim, just like, oh, this probably belongs to us. And I found it yesterday. And so I was like, oh, I wonder what this thing is worth.
Dude, like, I'm looking right now, man.
Original one, man. Dude, how much?
$710.
Dude, I know. It was $700, dude. It is insane. I'm kind of nervous to say this on the podcast because I'm like, please don't break into my house. But like, it is $700. I looked it up immediately after. I was like, this has got to be worth something, man. The original unopened Pokemon Yellow Game Boy game I found this weekend at my parents' house.
That's incredible. You should hold on to that for a while. It just see what happens, man.
I kind of do, but my mom told me I needed to sell it because they're power washing their deck and she wants the money for that.
Okay.
I was like, oh, all right, like, I guess I could do that, but like, this is my childhood. You just want it for power washing money? Like, this is a collector's item.
Well, some collector will be made really, really happy, and your parents' deck will get power washed. It's a win-win. Yeah. It's a win-win situation.
Well, a win-win lose. I don't get anything out of it.
Well, you're helping your parents out, man. They did a lot for you, all right? You know, just you got to remember that at the end of the day.
That's true.
If they wouldn't have bought that poke, that's actually their investment, not yours.
Yeah, but if I wouldn't have been interested in Pokemon in the first place, so I think they owe me at the end of the day.
That's awesome. You got to sell that. We're power washing the deck.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude.
Yeah. But that's my last Pokemon story. I thought that was very pertinent to what I thought. It was very coincidental, if nothing more than ironic, that I found that this weekend.
Yeah. I have a Pokemon musing. I just want to have a musing with you, and we can maybe chat back and forth over this for a second. So Pokemon had a resurgence in my life when I was, how old was I when I was living in New Jersey? Maybe like 25? We'll say 25. I was 25 years old, and it was Easter time, and I was shopping around, and they had a bunch of stuff on sale. And a Nintendo 3DS was on sale for like $100. And I was like, hey, that's actually a pretty good price on this bad boy. And it said it came with Pokemon X. Whatever that is.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was a Pokemon game with an X, and there was another one with a Y, and they decided to, instead of colors, they went with letters, and who knows where they'll go next.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was like, oh, well, you know, I got a little extra cash around. Let's see what this whole Pokemon thing's about. The game has not changed in how long has it been?
Like 25.
Just say 20 years, okay?
Yeah.
And I played it. Game hasn't changed much, except for the fact that you can do a lot of trading and stuff via the internet. And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. That's phenomenal. And they have all these apps and stuff where you can store your Pokemon on like an app. And then if you buy a new Pokemon game, you can download those Pokemon into like the new game. So basically, they're trying to keep you in the Pokemon ecosystem, right? Gameplay-wise, the game hasn't changed, right? You start off, you do 8 gyms, you beat the Final Four or Elite Four. I don't think you can say Final Four. I think you got to say Elite Four because, you know, basketball.
Right.
And it's whatever. Same thing. However, then this new Pokemon game comes out. I think it's Sword and Shield, right? So we went from letters to weapons.
And fantasy. Got it.
And so Sword and Shield. There's Pokemon that's a sword, and there's a Pokemon that's a shield.
There's literal Pokemon that are swords and shields now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are the legendary Pokemon. Oh, one's a sword,
man,
one's a shield.
Out of ideas.
I mean, well, when you're getting close to 1,000, I mean, how many?
That's when you start getting to, like, furniture, I guess.
You got to admit, like, the Pokemon character design team, I'm sure it's super stressful. Like, Mike, we have done everything. Like, we've done everything.
Yeah. What are we going to do? Nothing else, man.
Like, next time we're going to do hardware tools. You know,
yeah. Yeah, we're gonna
Pokemon crossover Bob the Builder. Let's Handy Manny
power tool themed Pokemon.
So anyway, this new one comes out. It's supposedly like adult Pokemon fans don't like it. And if you're an adult Pokemon fan out there, I am not making fun of you that much. A little bit, not that much. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, you know, I played the one that came out, whatever, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever it was. And I thought it was still fun. Like, it was still fun. It hadn't changed, but it was still fun. And a 9 or 10-year-old would think this game is great. But when you go on the internet and you hear, like, a 35-year-old man, 40-year-old man talking about how bad Pokemon is, it just doesn't feel right. Just doesn't feel good.
It's a bit much, man.
Just imagine going and seeing the latest Pixar film. Pixar puts out a movie. There's an old frustrated guy in the back who went and saw Toy Story when he was like 5 and changed his life.
Yeah. And he's lost just their way.
And he's just in the back. And it's like, this movie sucks. Like, what? All you kids down there, it's not like it was back in my day.
Yeah. CGI is not as grainy and it's too nice.
It looks too real. My goodness.
It improved too much.
Back in the day, people used to have to draw this stuff with their hands. Now they just use their minds or whatever they're doing now.
So, I mean, yeah, if you are 35 and you're criticizing a Pokemon game, that is like, I mean, that's like watching a Nick Jr. show and being like, this is stupid. Like,
right, yeah, right. It's like me coming
Dora, in. Come on, Dora. Figure it out already.
Why are you asking me, Dora? That's clearly the triangle. Jeez.
Just tell me. I know you're going to tell me. She always tells you, kids, just wait.
Like, exactly. Just being that guy.
Yeah, just being that guy.
What are you doing? I mean, you know she can't hear you. Shut up.
Yeah, real cool. You're talking to a screen there.
So anyway, this is just a little PSA. If you like things that are for children, that is fine. I like things that are for children. I like to play with Legos. Legos are sweet. However, just remember who they're for. They are for children. So just like movie critics who wanted to smash the Pokemon movie, I mean, obviously that's their job, right? But it's just like,
come on.
Understand the market, understand who they're made for. And whatever the frustrations were with Pokemon X and Y, I don't really know. Or Sword and Shield. It's too many games.
I like to think that these people are probably the people like me when they were kids and they went to Toys R Us and they just got the floor wiped with themselves because they couldn't get a stupid badge. I feel like they're the ones that grew up bitter. So I think this really all goes back to, listen, if you're going to stores and beating up on kids and card games, like, maybe let them win every now and then. Let them get a badge.
Yeah, let them get a pack of Pokemon cards because they don't make money. They don't have a job. They're not getting a paycheck. You know,
these are those 35-year-old people that were like me and they just had the spirit crushed when they went into a Toys R Us because there was another 35-year-old there who actually understood the game.
Yeah,
and didn't give them a chance.
Yeah. So anyway, just if you are a fan of things that are for children, just remember they're for children. And if you're frustrated with the way a franchise is going, maybe it's time to move on to something else. Or,
yeah,
you know, if you think we're idiots, make your own podcast and tell us how dumb we are. Send me the link. I'll listen to it.
Yeah.
And I'll enjoy every second of that. It's fun. But I do love I love Pokemon. I would, you know, if you got me a Pokemon shirt, I'd wear it. And it's good stuff. It's fun because it's cross-generational. My kids can like it. I can connect to that. That's one thing that I think is really neat. I feel like because a lot of the media that came out when we were kids has had a pretty long lifespan, and there's so much stuff that's kind of still relevant today that was relevant when we were kids, which is really neat, and that makes it pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's cool that, I mean, in order to be a successful company, you need to adapt to the times. And it is cool as an adult to see how Pokemon makes these resurgence using sometimes intuitive technology. Like when Pokemon Go came out, that was really cool. And I know it didn't last very long, and it kind of had a really quick spike, and then people stopped playing shortly after. But for that brief summer, man, that was a really intuitive, creative way to bring Pokemon back to the mainstream. And everyone all around the world jumped on it, man. Yeah. And I think that shows that the people who are working at Pokemon are really smart, and they know what they're doing. And it's really cool as a consumer to see them coming up with inventive ways to keep it relevant and not just kind of rehashing the same games or kind of just trying to jumpstart the trading card game again. They've moved on, and they know that their market's going to be ever changing.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree. And I think Pokemon Go has actually been considered somewhat of a long-term financial success, though. I think that it's been able to still do pretty good even after the initial explosion. I think when they made it, they didn't think it was going to be nearly as huge as it was. So it was one of those things that over exceeded expectations, but has still been a thing. And it's good.
Yeah.
It's good. So Zach, hit us with a couple of words to leave on, and then we'll hit the music and get out of here.
Thanks guys for listening. I hope if you haven't played Pokemon, which I'm pretty sure most of our listeners have, but if you haven't, dive into it head first. It's a great thing to get into. And if you're one of the old time Pokemon guys like me, you got kids on the way or kids at home, connect with them over it. It's like Cody was saying, it's a great way to share your childhood and connect with theirs. So I hope you enjoyed. I love talking about Pokemon. Cody, finish us off.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Parallel Quest. Again, please be sure to head over to steellakestudio.com to see all that we have to offer and where you can find out how you can support the show. Thank you so much to Jake Butler for providing our bumper music. And as we like to say before we leave, we'll see you next time on Parallel Quest.